You're listening to After Dark number 5. This is tape number 1, and this is side 2. Now let's turn it over to Mr. John Bowker with a story on Groundwave and Skywave.
One of the more confusing aspects of trying to learn about radio waves and how they travel out from a station is trying to picture the ground wave that every textbook mentions. The usual concept, I guess, is picture a radio wave traveling through the ground, and it's tough to figure out just how this happens. Well, there's a good reason for your trouble. You see, radio waves don't travel through the ground. So what's this all about? Well, picture all the radio energy coming off the radio tower in all directions, up and down and all angles around and up and down. Fine. Except that not too many people live directly above the radio tower, nor directly below it, usually, or at much of any upward angle, unless the tower is in a valley, of course. The way most engineers think of this is to say that the energy coming off the tower straight out horizontally is the ground wave. That the energy coming out at small upward angles from this horizontal, they're called the tropospheric waves. And the energy leaving the tower at even steeper angles is the ionospheric wave. Much of the energy that leaves the tower at a negative angle is reflected more or less upwards and falls into one of the categories of above. Now, what this means is, if you have a very tall tower, more of the negative angle energy that goes downward from the horizontal actually bounces and goes out toward the horizon, adding to the overall ground wave. And this is why a lot of stations have tall towers, because it just adds to their ground wave coverage out from the tower. The ground wave is the most important part of the station's signal. It provides a non-fading signal to radio receivers within its range. A ground wave may follow the curvature of the Earth a little, a very little, but some, if it has enough power, of course. It is really the meat and potatoes of a station's coverage pattern. The tropospheric wave travels out and provides some additional coverage due to the bending of the signal path by the lower atmosphere. But the main portion of the radiated signal is out and upward. This is the ionospheric wave, continues its upward path during daylight hours until absorbed by an ionized layer called the D layer, and that's about, 30 to 50 miles above the Earth's surface. This D layer is highly dependent upon the sun's ultraviolet rays for its source of energy, and so at night, the D layer disappears. This allows the upward-bound radio waves to continue until they reach an altitude of perhaps 70 miles, and there they hit the E layer. And the E layer reflects medium-wave signals, such as those we discuss here in the After Hours and National Radio Club matters. And that's what's used for domestic broadcast primarily. The E layer is not perfectly uniform. In fact, it's a rather uneven mirror and rarely the same from hour to hour. And it is frequency-dependent. That means it might reflect signals of stations in one part of the broadcast band in one direction, and the signals of other stations in quite a different direction. And that's what makes DXing at night so interesting. It's never the same two nights in a row, is it? So, still, we're all familiar with the reliability of some DX station signals at night, stations that come in strongly most nights of the year, and their presence is made possible by the E layer. Now, any DXer has experienced the sound of a distant station at night become very thin. And that is, all of the bass notes of an orchestra fade out, or the announcer's voice becomes muffled or distorted. Just sort of cyclic. Every minute or two it would do that. Now, this is because the E layer is selectively reflecting some of the frequencies that make up the sound portion of the radio signal. Listeners to overseas shortwave music broadcasts would recognize this immediately and would agree that the fidelity usually cycles from decent to terrible several times an hour most nights. So the real trick as a broadcaster is to figure out how to get more of the AM station's energy to go out from the tower horizontally. After all, that's where most of the listeners drive their cars and live. Just recently, near Washington, D.C., an experiment has been started to test some of the new antenna ideas for AM stations over the past year or so. Jerry Starr has mentioned their tests at 1660 kilohertz in his AM switch column in the weekly news magazine DX News of the National Radio Club. If you have a radio that can tune to these frequencies above 1600, you might give them a listen from time to time.
Thank you very much, John, for that information on Skywave and Groundwave. Our DX Audio Service microphones and tape recorders tape recorded one of our DX Audio Service members, Pat Cassidy. Give this a listen from WKEN Radio.
You're tuned to Community Radio, Central Delaware's information station, 1600 WKEN. This is Community Forum with your host, Bob Groom.
And good morning, everyone, and welcome to a Monday morning community forum here on WKEN. It's the 31st day of August, the last day of the month. We've had a pretty quick month, I would say. It's gone by in a hurry. We have a very interesting guest here with us this morning. I think all of you who listen to WKEN on a regular basis are very familiar with our weather forecast and very familiar with weathercaster Pat Cassidy. And Pat is with us here this morning in person here in the studio to we're going to talk a bit about weather for this particular area. We're going to probably get into the hurricane season a little bit and how Pat relates with the weather forecasters of the National Weather Service, and just a lot of different things. And of course, if you'd like to join in with us this morning, do give us a call at 674-1234. If you've got a question about the weather that you've always wanted to ask and haven't known who to ask, this is your opportunity this morning to pick up the phone and talk to Pat Cassidy. Pat, it's a pleasure to have you here with us this morning.
Thank you, Dave.
We might as well go ahead and get started and talk a little bit about what your normal day is like as far as a weather forecaster goes. What time do you get started putting a weather forecast together that comes into WKEN?
Well, I kind of look for it around midnight. I end each day's weather at midnight and start the new days. I keep up with the current weather conditions at the greater Newcastle County Airport as far as the barometer and all that. And then I use a sheet each day to mark down as many of the readings as I can. And I listen for updates around 4 to 4:30 that comes in over the wire that might change the forecast. And we're getting to the seasons of the year now where or away from summer, and September starts tomorrow, and the weather can change very quickly from what looked like was going to happen at midnight to when I go on the air at 5 a.m., which I really don't go on the air at 5 a.m., but that's the latest observation that I can get to make my determinations.
Okay, and what time do you generally get in touch with us down here at WKEN to give us your initial forecast for the day?
Oh, about 10, quarter after 5, sometimes a little bit later, but not much because we want it to be done by 5:30. That's when you go on the air.
Okay, and now you're keeping an eye, you're keeping tabs on things during the course of the day. So if conditions are changing and the forecast may change, you get on the telephone to us to let us know to update the forecast as we go along.
Oh, certainly, especially the way things were going around here Friday.
Yeah, Friday was one of those days that you didn't know what was going to happen from one minute to the next. That's for sure.
Well, you kind of know that thunderstorms were going to develop, and they can become severe. We had a lot of humidity and very moist, unstable air. The sun didn't help any. In fact, the sun makes it more unstable. Plus, the cold, dry air coming with the cold front, the two don't get along. So, I knew that there'd be thunderstorms somewhere along the line, and then of course the tornadoes developed. I know there was one in Seaford, there was one in Cambridge, Maryland, and I believe there was one, just north of Odessa somewhere, and I know there were some up in Pennsylvania.
So we were kind of sitting in the middle of it, and of course a tornado, I guess, is just something that you really can't forecast with a great deal of certainty, right? I mean, you can pick out areas, and you know that an area is has a potential for a tornado, but
for instance,
I guess that's the reason it's listed pretty much for the entire state of Delaware.
That's true, because you know a watch means that the conditions are favorable for the development of a tornado. A warning means that one has been seen. You know, a tornado can come along. I'll give you an example. It might, let's say, strike the part of the station out where the receptionist is and it could take everything in that room, just like you would pick up a box of toys and just destroy it, and it might miss this room altogether. That's how very small in size and coverage area a tornado can be.
And it hops around from place to place, too, so it might hit a house on one side of the street and miss a house on the other side of the street.
That's true. I know of a case out in Oklahoma one time. I have a friend there where it didn't hit her house or her husband's, but it took their parents' house next door and just destroyed it like it was nothing.
Mm-hmm. Weather, obviously, certainly is a phenomenon, I guess, if you will, one of those natural things that affects everyone's daily life. Whether you're getting ready to go to work, and obviously we have the four seasons of the year and so forth. I might mention, and Pat and I talked about this a little bit before we went on the air. Pat is blind. And it might be interesting, Pat, I think, for people out there that are listening to the show this morning to get an idea as to how this has affected your working on, you know, forecasting weather over the years. It's got to be a little, you have to do it a little differently than someone who has sight. Is that correct?
Oh, certainly. You know, if you have sight, you can read the maps that actually come in from the computers down in Washington. In fact, the folks at the National Weather Service at Newcastle County Airport call it the new package. And what it is, it's different information that comes in over the wire. Now, they do have computers that will enable the blind person to do that quite admirably pretty soon, but the trouble is they're very expensive, a lot of these computers are, and so I pretty much have to listen to other people's interpretations. But what I also do, I take what I've seen happen before when the weather comes, what conditions are most likely to happen, and then base my forecast on what I think will happen. And I think one area where the National Weather Service often goes wrong, and I'm not talking just about the folks up here mm-hmm. at the Newcastle County Airport, but many times Washington will send a forecast saying cloudy with periods of rain today and the high might be 80, and then periods of rain tonight, low near 60. They're overlooking the fact that when you have a cloudy, rainy day, unless you have a warm front or a cold front going through, you're not going to have a great deal of difference in the temperature. In fact, if you noticed on your rainy days, even in the summertime, you might have a 5-degree difference in temperature. Your temperatures are going to vary more under fair weather. Because in the daytime, of course, the sun does its heating, and at night, all the heat that was brought to us by the sun is radiated up into space. And we're getting to the time of the year now, you might see a 25 to 30 degree difference in temperature in one day.
Pat, is there a time of year? Obviously, we're looking at four seasons with spring, summer, fall, and winter. Is there a time out of those four seasons where you find yourself the weather to be the toughest to try to forecast for?
Yes,
and is there a time that may be the easiest?
Well, I think it's easiest in the summer because the basic thing you have to look for in the summer is the only thing you really worry about is how severe the thunderstorms are going to be when the cold front gets here, whether you're going to get them at all. And many times, you know, you mention 30% chance of a thunderstorm, but I often try to say on this station that with 30%, I still say that most of you will not receive a thunderstorm today. If it's a 70% chance, most people will receive one. But the biggest problem in forecasting the weather for me, and especially in Kent and Sussex counties in the wintertime, because you have to know where the snow, sleet, and rain line is going to be. If the temperature in the upper atmosphere or even ground level can be 1 degree, that will keep you from getting 1 inch of rain or 10 inches of snow. And obviously, if you forecast a rainy day and you get 10 inches of snow, it looks pretty foolish.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question, and I know that many of us, and myself included, you know, we sit out there, and matter of fact, we were talking again before we went on, and our forecast last Friday was pretty dire, and I think it was it had been forecasted that way pretty much all week because of the remains of Hurricane Andrew. But as it turned out, Friday afternoon turned out to be a halfway decent afternoon, but then we did get some rain on Friday night, but certainly not to the extent that, say, Wilmington got it.
Well, no, Wilmington really didn't get that much at all, but Philadelphia and north of Philadelphia got over an inch. Mm-hmm. I know Pittsburgh got over 3 inches, and central and western Maryland, they got an inch and a half to 2 inches. We just didn't get the brunt of it, but when you have that kind of a situation coming, you have to forecast the thunderstorms. I guess what I'm saying is oftentimes you have to forecast the worst possibility, even though it may not happen, because if you don't mention it, people will say, oh, well, the weatherman never said that was going to be that bad. And most of the time it's not going to be as bad as you forecast, but thunderstorms are a very hit-and-miss thing. It's almost like when you take a shower at home. You know, obviously in the bathtub or the shower where the water's coming out is certainly going to get flooded. But over where the sink in the bathroom is, it's going to be dry. So thunderstorms, you were mentioning earlier, Dave, that thunderstorms are like that. I have been in cars where I've ridden in and out of thunderstorms where actually you've gone from a heavy thunderstorm, you drive into sunshine, and the road is dry there.
Okay. We're going to be back with Pat Cassidy, our weather forecaster, in just a moment after we take a couple of short breaks. Those are news headlines at 15 past the hour. And now for a look at the weather, here's WKEN weather forecaster Pat Cassidy.
Well, good morning, Bob. Our cold front is moving through the state, although most of you wouldn't realize it because there's only cloudiness with it. There's very little moisture. And we're going to have a very pleasant day to end August and perhaps to begin September. Forecast then for today, mostly sunny and breezy, and temperatures on the warm side this afternoon, 82 to 87 degrees on a covered, winds out of the west to northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, fair skies, diminishing winds, rather chilly, 55 to 60, and maybe a little cooler inland away from the water bodies, and light north winds, less than 10 miles per hour. Tuesday, sunny and quite pleasant, low humidity, 75 to 80 degrees, humidity only in the 40s. And it looks like Wednesday, a warmer day, too, with sunshine and temperatures rebounding into the low 80s. And currently, I think you said we have 77?
77 degrees under mostly sunny skies.
Yeah, good day to get out and get the last week of sun before the school starts.
There you go. And that's our weather forecaster, Pat Cassidy. And Pat and I will be back in a minute to talk more weather. And it's 9:19 on WKEN. You're listening to Community Forum. I'm your host, Bob Groom, along with our guest this morning. Weather forecaster Pat Cassidy is with us this morning. And we're talking about weather forecasting and some of the difficulties and so forth that go into forecasting weather. Pat, one of the things we wanted to talk about a little bit, I know when I was stationed down at Andrews Air Force Base a number of years ago, they used to talk a lot about weather forecasting in this area of the country, and I guess they're talking about from the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area up through the mid-Atlantic states here, Delaware, New Jersey, as maybe being one of the toughest areas in the country, if not in the world, to try to forecast weather for. And I thought we might get your thoughts and feelings on that. And also, folks out there, if you have any questions for Pat, give us a call at 674-1234. We'd like to hear from you this morning and have a chance for you to ask Pat any questions. Anyway, Pat, tell us a little bit about forecasting in this particular area of the country.
Well, forecasting can be a problem, especially, like I said, in the wintertime, because not only do you have to time the low-pressure areas when they're going to get here, you have to keep in mind how fast they're moving, how much moisture is available. And most of our problem storms, when you deal with snow and ice, are the storms that come up from the south. When you get storms pretty much from the west, we're usually going to be on the warm sector of things, and many times we'll get rain. And I should even mention that the Dover area here on down into Sussex County gets quite a bit less snow than the Wilmington area usually. Once in a while, the Wilmington or the Dover area will get snow. Like we had a storm back in February of 1989. A snowstorm was supposed to move up the East Coast, and he pretty much died ride along the Delaware, New Jersey coast, and on that particular occasion, anywhere from Sussex County on up through Smyrna got 14 inches of snow or more. I know in Wildwood they closed the city down for 3 days because they couldn't get the snow removed quickly enough. And yet from Smyrna, Delaware on north, we virtually had nothing at all. We had a few flurries, and that's about all we had, and it was kind of an unusual situation. And when you think about Kent and Sussex counties, people here usually don't know how to deal with a whole lot of snow because it doesn't happen that often. Not that we're that great in doing it in Wilmington either, but we do get heavier snowfalls more frequently than you do simply because we're a little colder. And many times you'll be in a situation in Delaware and coastal South Jersey where the temperature could be in the low 30s up in Wilmington, maybe freezing or slightly above here, and in the mid to upper 30s down in Sussex County. And if you ever traveled up and down the state, you can go from, let's say, snow that's covering the ground north of the canal, sleet and freezing rain here in the Dover area, and rain in Sussex. And many times, too, we'll just be on the edge of the cold air masses when storms start. When you may start out with 4 or 5 inches of snow, and you change to ice for a while, and then to rain, and it gets real windy, and temperatures could rise to 50. And then on the back side of the low pressure, it may snow again before the storm's over. And what often happens there, too, is you get a lot of ice because of the rain, of course, that couldn't wash away. But what's tough about this area, I think, is just knowing where the cold and the warm air is going to be. If there's a high pressure in New England to promote the cold air that you need for a snowstorm here, we often don't get that here downstate, and it has to be watched continuously. And you know, you keep wondering, especially, well, has it turned to rain yet, or is it mixed with sleet yet? And then if you find that your snow is not going to be as highly accumulating as you thought were, you have to change your forecast to make sense, because people expect the worst. And I know if there's any kids listening, they all love it. Oh, we won't have school tomorrow. We won't. I used to get, when I was on another station, I used to get calls from parents and kids. We're going to have school tomorrow. And I would say, like, you better go do your homework anyway.
Better be planning on it, right?
Oh, yeah, because when I was in the seventh grade one night, we were supposed to get 7 inches of snow. I woke up in the middle of the night and I heard the rain spouts. And I knew what had happened. I didn't do my homework, and I almost cried because I heard the rain spouts, and I said, oh, I knew it's raining now. And it warmed up just enough to turn all the snow over to rain, so we had school.
Well, we get, obviously, the school districts, as well as parents, certainly listen to the radio stations here for the forecasts. And when you get into the snow period, obviously, I guess until we get really into late November, early December, it's not not that much of a concern, but they certainly do rely a great deal on our forecasts. And obviously, once the snow starts, they're looking very heavily for us, not only to give them an idea how much snow there's going to be, but also you get into school closings and activity closings and so forth. And so the radio stations, I think, become very important to people at that point in time.
Oh, yeah. You want to hear them in Philadelphia when they get snow out. They don't give you the names of the schools like they want to say the George Road School in Upper Darby. They read your numbers real fast. Like, I'll say, like, in Bucks County, school 10-11, 10-12, 10-14, 10-15. And they get a lot more coverage that way. Yeah. Down here, I know that they mention the name of the school, unless it's a public school where they might say,
say the district.
District public schools will all be closed today.
Right.
And I think sometimes the school districts would be better if we organized into numbers, too. And then you tell your child, remember, now you go to school 160 in Kent County. That's the name of your number of your school. And that's all you'd have to say. 160 will be letting out early. But I will say this, too. I think people panic too much in Delaware. You even see snow flurries. I don't know if they do it here, but I know upstate they do. You get snow flurries, they let people out of school just for a few flakes because they panic. You go to the different stores. I went to a 7-Eleven one night. There wasn't a can of soup to be had just because we were going to have 4 inches the next day. people really panic in Delaware. And I think we news media people are to blame for that because we make it to be a lot bigger deal than we should.
Well, don't you think, too, Pat, that we get a lot of that from the standpoint that there are times, and of course you had mentioned earlier that, you know, you have a tendency to forecast a little bit on the negative side. In other words, you'll go a little more towards the worst-case scenario. But I think some of the folks that are in the weather forecasting business have a tendency to go to the other side of the coin. And if you ever get caught out in a snowstorm someplace, or let's say if you've got people, let's say somebody that lives up in, or that works up in the Wilmington, Philadelphia area, but lives down here in Dover, they've got a long trek home over some roads that can be rather tough with some hills and curves and so forth in them. And they're listening, and if it looks like that forecast is going to be pretty rough, they're going to be looking, obviously, for the boss to let him go a little early, hopefully get home, beat most of the weather.
Oh, that's true. And I had an experience one time where I was coming down to my uncle's funeral in Lewis, and we got all the way to the Memorial Bridge. It was snowing upstate and accumulating pretty rapidly, and it was like walking on a carpet. As soon as we got over the St. George's Bridge, the roads were wet. There was wet snow here in Dover, and as soon as we got to Milford, from there it was all rain.
Right.
And if you listen, let's say if you don't listen to a local station, or even if you do, you know, you could have a Philadelphia or Wilmington station on, you could be down at the shore. Oh, it's only raining here. And then someone will say, oh, there's a foot of snow in Philadelphia. No kidding. Well, we better not try to go north today.
Right. Okay. We'll be back with Pat Cassidy in just a moment. It's 77 degrees under mostly sunny skies at 9:30. I'm Bob Groom reporting the news for WKEN in Dover. And we're back on Community Forum. Glad to have you with us here this morning on Monday, August the 31st, the last day of the month, and the first day, I guess, logically, before September 1st. We're talking about weather this morning. Before I get back to chatting about weather some more with Pat Cassidy, I would like to mention, in addition to Governor Castle being here with us, he'll be here with us from 9 to 10 tomorrow morning. He's got another commitment at 10 o'clock, so he'll be departing. And coming in to join us from 10:05 to 10:05. 10:30 will be Wayne from Green Seasons, and we're going to be talking about Green Seasons lawn and garden care, and we'll be getting in, I'm sure, a little bit to the yards in the fall, the trees and shrubbery, proper care, and some of the services that they have available, and suggestions that Wayne may have for how you can better take care of your yard. So we hope that you'll join with us tomorrow morning, listen in and call in for the governor. And also, if you have any questions for Wayne from Green Seasons, don't hesitate to give us a call. If you've got questions this morning about the weather or weather forecasting, give Pat Cassidy a call. I know Pat would like to hear from you, and so would I. And we're going to get back to talking with Pat. Pat, one of the things that I think that I find very interesting from the standpoint of weather in this area in particular, and it may be the same way at other places, other areas in the state of Delaware, is it seems like you can go from one area that maybe is 5 miles apart, and you may have some light sprinkles where you're leaving from. You'll drive 2 miles, and all of a sudden, it's almost like somebody has drawn a line, and you've had a rainstorm. I mean, you've got measurable rainfall on the other side of this line. I had this happen not too long ago, driving home from Wyoming and coming across Route 8. We had basically had light showers over in Wyoming, very, very light, you know, almost sprinkles. And I got to Route 8, and it was like, I mean, they'd had a rainstorm there, and the other side of Route 8 had a lot of rain. Is that something that is pretty familiar in Delaware, or at least in central Delaware, this particular area?
Well, it's very familiar in all of Delaware, especially in the summer and I'd say spring and maybe even the fall seasons, because thunderstorms or rain showers are very individual things, and they may not have a big coverage area. And if you ever watch the radar screen, you can see sometimes you can have a very heavy thunderstorm, but it may not be very wide. And, of course, it's only going to wet down certain areas as it moves along. But especially, I'd say, during the spring and summer, you'll find a lot of that. You don't see it quite as much in the fall, I'd say late fall, I'd say October on into the winter season, because usually our storms are pretty more well, how can I say it? They're more organized, I would guess, is a good way to say it at that time of the year. And, of course, rain does move from south to north, but, like, if rain is moving, or if you live in the south side of Dover and someone says, well, it's raining here now, and you might say, well, it's not raining here yet, but you know eventually it will. And there's more of a coverage area with these wintertime and fall, like low pressure areas, than you would see in the summertime when they're just individual showers and thunderstorms, and they can move very quickly as well.
Now, Pat, we were talking about forecasting for, you know, different seasons of the year. Is there a particular season of the year that you find probably to be the easiest time of the year to forecast weather for?
Yeah, I would say the summertime. Spring and fall can be questionable, because in spring and fall you have a battle zone between summer not wanting to leave, and in the spring, winter not wanting to leave. But once summer gets established, it's pretty easy, especially if you have a stagnant area of high pressure that's just not going to move. You can have the same forecast for days and days. In fact, I've jokingly said, you don't need to call me for the weather until Thursday, because it's going to be the exact same thing. And of course, it can be the same thing if you get a cold front that stalls near you, like we had 2 weeks ago. And when low pressure areas moved along that front, as long as that front stayed there, we had sprinkles of rain or different types of shower activity for days, and that didn't change. And I don't particularly care for that kind of weather pattern. I like to see things move. But, the summer is the easiest, except for when you have severe thunderstorms, and that makes it a little bit more exciting. I think the winter is the hardest. And, of course, when you mentioned in the summer and fall, hurricanes can, of course, cause you a big headache. But we don't get a lot of hurricanes in Delaware. We've had a few, like Gloria back in 85. Hugo could have
come up the coast and got us.
That's right. My English is terrible.
Oh, don't worry about it.
But it could have, and it did it. Once it reached Charleston, it went west.
Mm-hmm.
And all we got from it was some winds up to 30 miles an hour and occasional sprinkles, but we had nothing compared to what Charleston got. But Gloria came pretty much close to our coast. It went right by Ocean City. And even when the storm did come ashore in Atlantic City, we had wind gusts of 55 miles an hour, and we had over 5 inches of rain, but there was very little damage done in Newcastle County, and not a whole lot in Kent and Sussex, as I can remember, back in 85.
Is there a potential, Pat, with the hurricanes, for maybe a storm that comes further up the coast, that comes up to this area, maybe not being quite as severe as the one that packs that big punch coming right out of Bermuda into the Bahamas, into that area that hits into the Florida and the Carolinas? They seem to get, and the ones that come across and maybe come into through from the Gulf, seem to get a lot heavier storms than we get up in this area. Is that something that's not necessarily the case, or is it something that we just haven't seen that much of in the past?
Well, you're usually right, but the problem of it is, by the time these storms get up to our ocean and bay water, temperatures are quite a bit lower, maybe 10 degrees lower than what you'll find in the Carolinas, Georgia, Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. I believe I heard the radio announcer say last week down in New Orleans, the water temperature in the Mississippi was like 84 degrees. We hardly ever see that in the ocean, the temperature getting down. The bay can. I know the Chesapeake Bay often gets up into the low 80s. I know off of Lewis it's been in the low 80s if you had a real hot summer, which we haven't this year. But they can. Occasionally a hurricane will come up, like Hazel did in 1954. If I can remember that, I don't know how many of our listeners will, but the ocean was unusually warm that time of year, and we got it in October, so it certainly did not lose a whole lot of its punch when it got up to Wilmington. But most of the hurricanes we get some leftover winds, maybe 50 to 60 miles per hour, like Donna in 1961 and Camille in 69, David in 77, or was that 79, I guess it was. And there were some tornadoes here in Claymont with David, but those were pretty hot summers those years. So the hotter the summer, the warmer the ocean can be, or the bay, and that blends into it. But usually when you get into October in this area, the water temperature begins to drop so that it won't be too severe.
Okay. We're going to be back to talk some more weather with Pat Cassidy, our weather forecaster, in just a moment. And we're back on Community Forum for Monday, August the 31st. Glad to have you with us here this morning. If you'd like to talk to our weather forecaster, Pat Cassidy, give us a call at 674-1234. We'd love to hear from you. Any questions or comments that you might have, please don't call in and say, hey, why'd you miss that forecast? Because that will happen periodically, and that goes with the weather forecasting business. But if you've got questions about the weather, this is the man to answer those questions for you, and we're glad to have Pat with us this morning. Pat, how did you get into weather forecasting, and how long have you been in this business?
Well, I should say my grandfather was from Lewis, Delaware, my mother's father, and he was a fisherman when he lived down there, and I guess growing up with him, it was something that I always wanted to get involved with was the weather. My grandfather was such an observer of the weather that if the winds even were blowing out of the northeast at 3 miles per hour, he would not take a boat out on the Delaware Bay. And I used to tell him, I said, well, it's not blowing that hard, but, you know, northeast winds make and east winds make the water kind of rough. So that was my roots in the weather. And then I grew up with people on TV. I'm sure some of our residents who get Philadelphia TV grew up with people like Wally Canaan, Francis Davis. And I used to always ask my mom if I could stay up until 11 o'clock to hear what they were forecasting, especially, again, if there was snow in the forecast. And the more I heard those people, the more I wanted to get involved with the weather. So my first job was a station in Newark back in 1978. That was helped along by a letter about me in the news journal that was written. That kind of got me the exposure. And I just can't explain the satisfaction I've felt in dealing with the weather every day. I've got weather records at home that have been taken since 1930, pretty much, and that's a real observation point, too. I get calls about the weather different times, what happened on a certain day. I've been on 5 different radio stations, 2 TV stations, although I just filled in on TV. And I guess from my grandfather's influence and just watching the weather as a child, it was just something I knew I wanted to get involved with. I know that people make a lot more money in other businesses than I'm making doing the weather, but I wouldn't trade it for the world because it's just something I like to do, and I think that people should realize, sure, you have to make a living to be able to pay your bills, but try to find a job that you enjoy doing, and the weather is just as much as part of me as my arms and legs are.
Mm-hmm. Pat, let's go back and talk a little bit more about hurricanes. Obviously, we're in hurricane season. We've just seen Hurricane Andrew create a tremendous amount of devastation in Florida and Louisiana. And I guess that any time you get a hurricane that crosses through Florida, regardless of whether it's in the Miami area or it's up in the central or northern part of the state, it has a tendency, or it can very easily rebuild its intensity out over the Gulf of Mexico, and then you've got a basically a double dipper because it hits two locations like it did last week. The thing that I was wondering, of course, we were supposed to get considerable rain. We didn't get a lot here in Dover, but I guess, as you said, there was quite a bit up in the Philadelphia area, north of Philadelphia, that came through. Does it need the remnants of a hurricane when it comes through like that? Does it need some type of a front to climb on to bring all that moisture, or does a hurricane of great intensity usually have the force to maybe a couple of days down the road to bring a lot of rain to this area?
Well, by the time these storms get up here, yes, it would very much be of a help to have a front that they can cling to, because although there was a lot of moisture left over by the time the storm got up here, it was definitely weakening. The winds were probably down to 20 miles per hour, and of course the further inland a storm gets, it gets away from the water bodies unless you have a lot of lakes and rivers around. But yes, that front, the cold front that was coming through, did really help to give the storm the needed moisture. Unfortunately, we didn't get it, and I certainly don't ever want to wish a hurricane to come into anyone's area, because, you know, you look at the people down in Florida today, they still don't have decent food to eat, electricity. But we certainly could have used some of the rain, and as I've said on my report so much this year, we're approximately 4 to 4.5 inches below normal in rainfall. And that would have given us almost that much. Mm-hmm. We just haven't had that much precipitation this year. And, you know, the winter was pretty dry. Very little snow this year. But back to the hurricanes, yes, that front certainly did help to bring some moisture to us. Unfortunately, we just weren't the beneficiaries of it.
Okay. And I guess that's one of those things, as you were talking about earlier, that, you know, you usually try to look at things from a worst case scenario. And I guess that's probably the best way to look at it. And then if it doesn't happen, the worst that can happen is people say, well, he missed it again, you know. But we'd rather have you miss it on the worst side rather than the other way around.
That's true.
Again, going back to hurricanes, and I guess we'll talk a little bit about this because we are in the middle of hurricane season. I guess hurricane season generally runs, mid-August through the latter part of September?
Well, not really. They start to happen in June. If you remember Hurricane Agnes back in 72, that storm developed in June. So it's unusual to get a whole lot of activity in June because the ocean is still rather chilly for this time of year, but they can start in June, and we have been known to have hurricanes live until the first part of November, although they're rare then, but they certainly can live until November. We're about at the height of the season, late August and September. I don't think the ocean's going to get a whole lot warmer than it is right now, too, but a lot of our hurricanes, like Camille, which did a lot of damage in Mississippi, did come our way around the middle of September of 1969. Fortunately, we just got a lot of rain from it, but I remember that particular storm because we did have wind gusts up to 45 and 50 mile an hour at times.
Okay. Pat, how has weather forecasting changed over the years? You've been in it now for a number of years, and obviously there have been changes. You get new equipment, new ways of doing things. Has there been a significant change in weather forecasting?
I would say so. I would say so. It used to be pretty much, from what I've been told now, this is before I was involved in it.
Sure.
That if you, you might call different, if you worked in the National Weather Service, a lot of it was done by phone. Like, you might call Washington and you might say something like, well, the temperature's almost 50 degrees here. You're only calling for temperatures of 52. I think we're going to beat that. And they might say, okay, you can up your temperature 3 degrees. A lot of it was done by telephone. It was probably more expensive to have all those long distance calls. Now, things can be sent out on a teletype or computer. And that's what I said earlier about the package deal that comes across. If you ever follow the forecast, as I do from the National Weather Service, they'll usually get their evening forecast around 4 p.m. And on a day like today, it certainly doesn't make a whole lot of difference. But if you're awaiting the arrival of a storm, sometimes a storm will not have moved as fast as you thought it would have in 6 hours. And so sometimes you can postpone the storm for another day. But computers do a lot of work. I mean, someone has to feed those computers, but they do speed up the process quite a bit. Unfortunately, though, I've found that a lot of computers break down considerably. And when computers do break down, it can slow everything that goes on at any weather. Well, not just the National Weather Service, whether it be AccuWeather or CompuWeather. And, of course, another thing is changing the weather, too. There's a lot more different weather services available. It used to be that the National Weather Service and AccuWeather were the two big ones, but I guess there's 8 or 9 around the country that do it now. You listen to all the different radio stations, and you'd be amazed how many, too, are having a private forecaster like we do here.
Mm-hmm. Also, the Weather Channel on television certainly provides, for anyone that has cable TV, they can tune into the weather basically any time.
Plus, the weather radio system, now, like National Weather Service in Wilmington operates a station that's down in Lewis. And any of you didn't know that, you buy a weather radio like this, Dave, you can see what I've got in my hand.
Yep.
You can get the Lewis weather station here in Dover. It doesn't usually get into Newcastle County unless you have a southeast or south wind. It seems like the atmospheric conditions will propel the signal out further north.
Mm-hmm.
But they say they serve Kent and Sussex County. I wish they had had it in Newcastle County because they do a lot better job. The Wilmington office does a lot better job in telling you what's on radar throughout the state. Philadelphia has a weather radio too, but they don't cover Delaware all that well. They may mention that there's a thunderstorm in the Wilmington area, but you listen to the one in Dover, they'll tell you, like, where weather radar will show you where the thunderstorms or where the snow's beginning. And they mention communities like Millville and Atlantic City and Salisbury and a few other places.
Okay. Pat, I got to break in because we're about ready to go to ABC News at the top of the hour at 10 o'clock. Stay tuned to Community Radio WKEN in Dover. We'll be back in a moment.
Good Monday morning, everybody. I'm Chet Douglas with the latest from ABC News.
It's always a pleasure hearing one of our DX Audio Service members on the radio, Pat Cassidy, talking about weather on WKEN Radio in Dover, Delaware. And on cassette number two here, we're going to be talking about something that has a little bit to do with the weather. Well, maybe not. We're going to be talking about tracking the 1994 solar eclipse by radio. Some observations made by Ken Chatterton. And then we're also going to be looking at an article which was written by Mark Conley about your first 50 transatlantic countries and then some. So stick with us on the DX Audio Service After Dark series. This is After Dark number five. This wraps up cassette number one. We'll see you on cassette number two.